Next up presenting, we have the COO of Israel Chemicals, ticker ICL, Mr. Charlie Weedas. I'm sure you all know the potash story and the recent PotashCorp news, but ICL is growing specialty chemical presence in additives and food specialties, and has a lot here to talk about today. We have a lot of topics to discuss, so with that, I'll hand it over to Charlie. Thank you.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Again, I'm Charlie Weedas. I'm the Chief Operating Officer with ICL. And what I'd like to do is give you an overview of our company. This is a standard disclosure, nothing special. So ICL at a glance, we're a company of about $5.5 billion in sales, 13,000-plus employees around the world. You see our market cap a little bit under six. And we are a dividend company. I'll talk about that a little bit later on, 4.25%. And we're more than a potash company or more than a fertilizer company. And if you look at the two charts down below, what you see is the pie pieces that are green are in the ag sector, either specialty or commodity fertilizers. And then the other colors are specialty chemicals. And I'll get into those a little more specifically. Looking at the management team, about a year ago, our previous CEO left the company, and we have an acting CEO who was literally the previous chief operating officer whose place I took. And as a company, we have an executive chairman. So the idea was to keep Asher Greenbaum with 40-plus years of experience, about 10 years of those as division president, to be the person running our company now as our board of directors does a search for a permanent CEO. Two of the positions to focus in on here, one is Ofer Lifshitz, with over 20 years of experience, who is now the president of our fertilizer business, Essential Minerals. And the second is Eli Glaser, over on the right-hand side, 30 years of experience, and he is our new division president for our specialty chemical business. So how are we organized? How do we run? So we have two divisions. The green side, the left side, we call essential minerals, but this is essentially commodity potash, commodity phosphate, and specialty fertilizers. And each one of those boxes has a business unit manager running them, each with P&L responsibility. On the other side, the red side, Eli Glaser heads up our specialty solutions division. And again, each of the boxes below, industrial products, advanced additives, and food specialties is a business unit. And joining me today is Mr. Jim Moffitt, who is in charge of both the advanced additives and food specialties. So if you have a specific question, the right person is here. When you look at our sales breakdown, which is the pie chart below, you'll see that a little bit over half of our business is in the fertilizer agro space, and the rest in the other markets. And an important aspect here is ICL is more than a fertilizer company. We're more than just a potash company. So what is the backbone? Why are we structured the way we are? Originally, ICL was a state-owned enterprise with mineral rights to the Dead Sea and the Negev Desert, which meant bromine, phosphate, and potash. And over the years, what it has done is it has step-by-step moved downstream where the, for example, phosphate is sold as a fertilizer, but then turns into a key raw material which turns into the input to our specialty phosphate business. And you can say the same for bromine, and you can say the same for potash. So our business actually is, you can look at it as a specialty chemical business with back integration, or you can look at as a mineral company that forward integrated into more value-added markets. So where do we sell? Where's our focus? Obviously, if you're selling fertilizer, you're going into the farm, the ag space. And we do it in two ways. One is big bulk commodity, which is potash and phosphate, and this is where you're selling ships, all right, just big volumes of stuff. But the specialty fertilizer business is really the opposite of that. This is where we're selling 25-kilo bags. We're selling solutions. When I say solutions, I mean liquid for drip irrigation and things such as this matter. So we have a business that's heavy in agronomists. So, for example, in our commodity business with 5 or 10 salespeople, you can sell everything around the world. But just in the U.S. alone, we probably have 20 or 30 sales agronomists who are doing our specialty fertilizer business. And then as you move down the slide, you see we're in food ingredients, phosphate-based and protein-based. And then the industrial products, which are the red colors, go into a variety of industrial end markets, whether it's electronics or energy or water treatment, oil exploration, just a very, very large amounts of end markets. So where do we make our money? Do our sales go? If you focus on the lower part of the slide, the bar chart, you'll see that the green is our ag sales, and the red is our specialty chemical sales. So from a sales point of view, it's a little bit more than 50% is going into the ag. But if you look on the right-hand side, this is the operating income. And the operating income, actually, for the last couple of years, we're making more money in our specialty than we are on our commodities. And if you just take some average numbers, the operating income as a percent of sales for our ag business is in the probably the mid-teens, low teens. And if you look at the specialty businesses, it's in the low 20s. Now, the reason it looks like this now is because if you were to go back 5 years when potash was selling for $600, you would have a very different looking curve or different bars. But as a strategy, our company for many years, starting really in the 90s, has been a strategy of having this back integration mineral but go downstream. It's not something that's in vogue or has been popular now because commodity prices are low. It's been part of our strategy for decades and will continue. All right, first let me talk about the Dead Sea. I consider the Dead Sea to be the heart of ICL. From the Dead Sea comes low-cost potash and lots of it, and low-cost bromine and lots of it. And there's an important thing in our commodity business, our potash business, which means Israel is pretty well situated from a logistics point of view. When people look at cost curves on potash, for example, or phosphates, they typically are looking at the cost curve, FOB, the factory, or the gate. But really, the fact of the matter is your cost competitiveness is delivered to the customer. And if you're sitting in Israel, which is about the size of New Jersey, it doesn't take very long to have your products get to the ports. And then if you're going to North America or Europe, you're going through the Mediterranean. And if you're going to India and China, you're going through the Red Sea. So we have a definite cost advantage, both in terms of production from the Dead Sea, as well as logistics for our bulk of fertilizers. Okay, if also from the Dead Sea, we have bromine, which is a very important one of our industrial or specialty chemical businesses. And the thing about bromine is your source is important. So the source of our bromine comes from the Dead Sea. It's actually, you can consider it, after you take the water from the Dead Sea and extract the potash, you're left with a very concentrated brine which contains a high level of bromine. And the Dead Sea has hundreds of years of supply. And the reason that's important, this concentration, is because the higher your concentration, the lower your cost. So bromine from the Dead Sea is the most plentiful and is also the lowest cost relative to any other production location. So again, this is where the Dead Sea is a key strategic advantage to ICL. But again, we're more than just the Dead Sea. We have assets, for example, in polysulfate and potash located in the UK and located in Spain. And in phosphates, we have a location in Israel as well as a joint venture in China that we got into about a year and a half or two years ago. Going back now, doing a little bit more focus on our specialty chemical business, on this slide you'll see that there's the different colors, different colors. So the red colors are industrial products business, which is focused on bromine and phosphorus chemicals. The orange color is Advanced Additives, which is focused on phosphate chemistry mostly. And the blue is our food ingredient business, which is a combination of phosphates and proteins. If you look at the top line on the top, you'll see that the business has grown nicely over the past couple of years from $2.3 up to almost $2.6 billion. And if you look at the bottom, this is the segment operating profit. You'll see there's been nice growth there as well. And this is an area for focus for us as we continue to grow forward, looking at these specialty chemicals and invest more in them. Okay, I'm a COO, I'm not a CFO, so I'll do a very quick financial view. And I think I'll just focus on Q2 '17 versus Q2 '16. Sales relatively flat, gross profit relatively flat, operating income relatively flat. It's good that I'm a COO because it's easy. I don't have to get into too much detail here. But what I want you to focus on is where we've been focusing, which is free cash flow, and also on managing our CapEx. I'll show you a slide a little bit later here, but a big area of focus for us has been to really manage cash for two primary reasons. Number one is to manage our debt levels, as well as to make sure that we have the cash flow for our dividend payout. Cost reduction. When you're in the commodity business, a key focus is on cost, and so we're talking potash and phosphate here. And for the past few years, and an area that I focus a lot on, is reducing our cost per ton of our products. Because as you know, the prices of potash and the prices of phosphate, until very recently, have been going down. And here we have a very good story, which includes procurement as well as operational excellence in our factories, and this focus will continue. It doesn't slow down at all. On CapEx, again, because of the situation that has been going on in the commodity fertilizer business, we have been reducing our overall CapEx year-over-year, but we're not starving our factories. We're still investing at a level that's at our depreciation, if not a little bit higher, and we continue to invest in some growth projects as well. Cash flow. So cash comes from receivables, payables, CapEx primarily. And if you go back on the left-hand side of the bar charts on the top, you'll see that quarter by quarter, there was more fluctuation in terms of making versus using cash. But if you look at the previous six quarters, we've been successful in being positive cash the entire time, even as, for example, last year, potash prices were continuing to decline. A part of that is coming from working capital. Now, of course, you can't do this forever, but we still think that there's improvements to be had for 2017 and 2018. And again, this gets back to this whole area of operational excellence, which is a very high focus for us. Capital allocation. I mentioned this earlier. A couple of things to focus on. Number one is debt reduction. So recently, we mentioned that we will divest about $500 million worth of business, or we want $500 million worth of proceeds. This primarily targeted to reduce our debt. Today, we have a debt-equity ratio of about 3.5. We're investment grade. We want to maintain our investment grade. We want to lower that closer to about 3. Solid shareholder return. We have been, and we want to continue to be, a dividend company. I showed you earlier, dividend yield of about 4.25. And our dividend policy is that we pay 50% of our net income after adjustments as a dividend. So we don't pay cents per share. We pay a percentage of our income. This has been our policy for a long time, and we basically pay at that level, at 50%. We don't go to 10, 30, 50. It's been at the upper end for a long, long time. And then in terms of longer-term value creation, we see growing our specialty fertilizer business through what I would call smaller acquisitions, that we buy a technology that might be a nice technology that's regional, and we plug it into our global infrastructure for growth. I can say the same for our food ingredient business, as well as our other specialty chemical businesses. Highly, highly unlikely we're going to go out and buy up another potash company, for example. So our focus for growth, especially fertilizers and specialty chemicals. The main challenges for this year have been the same, our major challenges for the past couple of years. Potash prices had a significant change over the past 5 years, and of course we've reacted to that. We've seen that the prices have stopped going down here in the last negotiations in Asia. We continue to see pricing pressures on the phosphate side, and understand that that's a dynamic as the Chinese export and the Moroccans and the Saudis react to that. But our focus will be to continue on what I would call the commercial excellence of our specialty business, where the value comes from. On our commodity side, it will be on the operational excellence, getting the cost per ton down, and, of course, continuing to manage cash as a very high level of focus for us as we move forward. So some of this is a little repetitive, but commodity business continues to be challenging, and we're ready for that. Our performance is solid. And we have a balanced structure that says we're not just a commodity fertilizer company, but when you look at the numbers right now, we're half of a specialty chemical business and half of a commodity fertilizer business. Thank you, and we'll take some questions.
Thank you. Just on the operational excellence within the potash segment, can you just give us a brief update on your three main operations? You've had some moving parts over the last, let's say, 2 to 3 years, mainly the UK, but also a significant cost reduction program in Spain and some modest changes to DSW as well. So can you just take us on a real quick trip through Europe, back to Israel, please?
Okay. So I'll do it in the order that you mentioned. So in the UK, we have what had historically been a potash mine, and recently a relatively high-cost potash mine. We think that we will completely finish mining potash there probably within a year next year, give or take a quarter. But we've converted that to a mine that produces what we call polysulfate. And polysulfate is literally a mineral you extract and crush and sell. You don't have to do any processing. And it contains potassium, it contains sulfur, magnesium and calcium. And this, as well as blends, is the future for that particular site. And there was zero sales of this a few years ago, and we're on a pathway to sell about 1 million tons by 2020, and then beyond that, expand that business. And it uses exactly the same infrastructure, it's already there, that potash used before. The second was Spain. In Spain, we have two mines. Each more or less 500,000 tons, and we're in the middle of a project to take those two, consolidate it to one. Of course, when you consolidate it, you increase this capacity so we don't lose net capacity, but this is strictly a cost reduction project in order for us to be competitive in what's happening in terms of the potash market and the future scenarios in terms of being competitive. And then our biggest site is the Dead Sea, which is roughly 80% of our production. Here, our cost position is good today. It will be good tomorrow. And our opportunity there is in more of debottlenecking, a couple hundred extra thousand tons, something like this.
And when you think about the marketability, obviously there's been a lot of change, or there's ongoing change within the sector with two larger competitors consolidating. How do you feel about your cost position versus where you did, let's say, 2 years ago? And then also from a marketing perspective, do you foresee any potential changes in marketing more material, more or less in the U.S., more or less in Europe, as well as kind of China and India, given your geographic presence?
Yeah. So our main markets are India, China, and Brazil in terms of exports, in terms of big volumes, but including, by the way, Europe. In the U.S., we're a much smaller player, and I would guess that in the future that shape will remain the same. In terms of the consolidation in the market, we really don't see that as having too much of an impact on us in terms of the marketing and sale of our products, because it doesn't really change too much what I would call the balance. The thing that was in the news recently, though, is China and or India both said that the upcoming PCS merger, maybe they need to do something with the shares of ICL. And so if there's going to be an impact on our company, I think that is the impact. But even that we actually think is positive, because today, roughly speaking, 14% of our shares are held by PCS. And quite frankly, we'd like to increase our float. And one way for that to occur is for PCS to sell some of that. They've been talking about that for years, haven't really done anything with it, and now it looks like maybe something will happen. I don't have any special insight, but to me, that's probably the bigger potential impact on our company.
The Chinese more or less said they had to, so
we'll see.
Fingers crossed.
Yes.
Long time in the making. When you also, well, let's shifting over to some of the other businesses. When you think about the bromine business, obviously that's once again changed over the last few years, but your cost position is fairly advantageous. Can you just comment on how you think about the strategic rationale for that business? Obviously, the cash generation is pretty solid for you guys, especially given your strategic rationale with the investors and the dividend payout. Mm-hmm. So can you just comment on that, and then potentially how you see that market evolving over the next 2-3 years, specifically hitting on China?
Okay. So bromine comes from the Dead Sea, which is the heart of ICL. So it's part of our company DNA, so to speak. Our strategy in this business has been value over market share. And when you look at the dynamics, and you look at our cost position, and you look at our product portfolio, so there's cost, which is important, but the portfolio is also important. And we believe we have the best of both worlds. Here in, for example, China does not have overcapacity. They don't have any new technology. So China is not a market threat to us. And so it's an industry where you look at the market today, it grows with GDP because it's going into electronics and oil exploration, pesticides, herbicides, drugs. It grows like that. It generates a lot of cash for us, and it's also an area where we spend our larger percentage of R&D in order to develop new downstream product lines. So we have that back-integrated low-cost bromine, but really the value isn't just that, it's going downstream with new products, and that's where our focus is.
On the demand front, have you seen anything change on a regional basis on where you're marking the material? Is that kind of just steady eddy from where it was last year?
No, it's more steady. There was a trend where electronics were getting smaller. If you were to go back 5 years, it looks like that has more or less run its course. And actually, some things get bigger, like the televisions. For example, they're getting bigger. The iPhones get smaller, then they get bigger also, right? But most of the markets we're selling into are very steady markets, so I don't see any disruptive thing coming there.
And on that, I have to ask an ultra-long-term question. Given one of the main topics in this conference, and I can tell you just in the investment community, is obviously on energy storage, and there's obviously a lot of noise in the lithium.
Yeah.
Simon, can you just comment on the potential longer-term uses of bromine in terms of battery sizes, longevity, et cetera?
Yeah.
It's my understanding that you potentially have some things in the turn of the next decade which could
right.
come into fruition.
There's actually two buckets here. One bucket is taking what I would consider to be older molecules that have an application and turning those and making that into a different molecule which has better performance and replaces it. For example, FR-122P is one of our newer products, and that's exactly what it did. It took a product that had a not-so-good toxicology profile and replaced it with one that has an excellent toxicology profile and better profits. And so there's other opportunities along those lines. This is without any new markets, nothing at all. The second thing is, for example, energy storage. There's a technology that's in the startup phase now. There's multiple startup companies looking at using bromine in flow batteries. And flow batteries are the batteries that are very, very big. They won't go in your cell phone or your car, but they go into the grid. And so if you're collecting solar or wind power when the energy is available, you need to store it someplace. And the options today, for example, there's lithium and vanadium and a couple others, but we believe that this could be a good growth opportunity for us as more and more renewable energy is put in and needs to be stored. Okay, again, big scale grid, not small scale, phones and things like this. Another area is in the United States, when you burn coal, of course, you put mercury into the air, and there's laws that say you can't do that. And bromine technology actually takes the mercury out of the emissions. But the largest burner of coal in the world is actually in China. And we see that the regulation in China is beginning to mimic more and more the West. And we see that as being a potential opportunity for using bromine applications to extract mercury out of power plants, for example, in China, and then even further, for example, in India.
For those of us that like sushi, thank you. then finally, just moving on, one more question on the kind of the mineral side. Your phosphate business, obviously, once again, the phosphate market has come under a lot of pressure. Actually, I'd argue potash has been fairly stable throughout 2017. Phosphate has been about a bit of the opposite. You have a unique position, a unique partnership, in China. Can you comment on, how that's going? It seems like it's now stabilized and improved a little bit, but your longer-term view of your own business there, your own involvement, as well as any changes in environmental policy and regulation in China in the phosphate business.
Okay. I'll answer this two ways. One is I'll focus on what I would call the commodity side, and then there's a specialty side, which, in fact, Jim manages, and he can comment about that. We invested in a state-owned enterprise commodity phosphate business in China, but we have no interest in being in the commodity phosphate business in China. What we basically did was we said we're going to buy a business and we're going to convert it into a specialty phosphate business like what we have today, and we're on that path. But the other part of your question was around the regulatory things. And I can definitely say, in our business on the bromine side, the increased requirement for environmental and safety things in the bromine is definitely there. It impacts our competitors. It puts us in a good place because we're already at that level of performance. But what you see is factories literally closing, production being lower and whatnot in China because of this push on the regulatory side. It's coming to the phosphate part as well. I can't say that it's there yet on phosphates. It looks like it's showing up on phosphorus, and maybe Jim can talk about that in a second. But the phosphate industry in China, we believe, will restructure. It makes no money. It's highly polluting. It's state-owned. It has high levels of debt. So it sort of fits all the check marks that you read about the targets for restructuring. Right. Jim, the specialty...
Thank you. The specialty business in China, we closed on the joint venture in November 2015, and quite frankly, we've been very pleased at the progress in terms of the organizational development, more importantly, in terms of the business results. We are making money in China on the specialty phosphates and very good, relatively speaking, cash flow. So it's kind of the untold story of the phosphate ICL investment in China. The specialty part is making money and is growing. In the announcement, when we bought the business, we talked about taking a purified wet acid technology to China. We are still considering that very strongly. And as Charlie said, with the push on thermophosphoric acid and elemental phosphorus regulations and being restrained and shut down, we're even more excited about the alternative technology and the opportunities there. I was in China last week, and the team's energized, and 2017 will be a good year.
So we haven't spoken about specialty yet. So could you just give a quick evaluation? For those of the audience who are unfamiliar with your specialty business, it seems that there's a view that business is completely underappreciated by sell side analysts, buy side analysts in the U.S. And you've been slowly but surely kind of ramping your presence there. Can you just hit on kind of the two to three key themes that you see as most influential in terms of your overall results at present, and how you see that business evolving over the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, let me talk about food specialties and advanced additives. The food specialties is a growth area for ICL. We've done that a bit via acquisitions the last 3 or 4 years. We bought a protein company based in Austria in March 2015. The business has performed well. The big application we're excited about is infant formula in China. That's about a $15 billion market. We sell proteins into that. We're also unique in that we have organic whey proteins, which is actually hard to come by. And the organic infant milk formula in China is growing very, very strongly. We had also bought another small food ingredients company several years before that. So we are continuing to look at bolt-on adjunct acquisitions in the food ingredients business, and we think we do it pretty well. And advanced additives on the phosphate chain is really more GDP kind of driven growth. But we do think there's opportunities in paints and coatings. We bought a small paints and coatings phosphate producer 4 or 5 years ago in Indiana, and also in construction. So that's the growth areas for advanced additives. I don't know, Charlie, if you want to talk about the bromine more.
I mentioned bromine already, but what I didn't mention was specialty fertilizer. We have again, this is the fertilizing business where you're selling small packages to farmers, but not farmers growing soybean and corn, but the farmers who are growing vegetables, chocolate, what you would call the high cash type of crops. And these companies very often are using drip irrigation or tailored fertilizer formulations exactly for the product that they're growing. And here, the amount of work and technology is exploding around the world. We have a global presence here, and so from a growth point of view, the market itself is growing greater than 5% per year, or almost 10% per year, much more than what I would call the bigger part of the fertilizer business. But there's a lot of opportunities to buy what might not be a fertilizer, but if you add it to a fertilizer, it helps with a growth regulator. It helps keep moisture in the soil. It helps take nitrogen out of the air. There's a lot of really exciting new technologies coming here. And our strategy is to buy a good technology, maybe it's a regional one, bring it into our global infrastructure, and then you grow it organically, rather than pay a high multiple for a big company that makes it sometimes hard to return. So we can afford a high multiple company as long as it's small, but then we can grow it organically afterwards.
Hi. What is the main reason for considering the disposal of the performance additives division focusing on flame retardants?
I think things have gotten mixed up in terms of how things get talked. About 2 months ago, maybe less, our chairman said that we would like to sell, I mentioned earlier, sell about $500 million worth of businesses in order to help reduce our debt. And the businesses that we sell there, we're not public with what we're selling, except for the ones that we've already done. So we sold, or we haven't yet closed yet, but we sold on a company called IDE, which we have a 50% ownership in. And this is a company that has technology for desalination of seawater into drinking water. So this is well outside of our core business. All right? Like any company, if someone gives us an offer too good to refuse, of course it's hard to reject it. But from a simplistic point of view, the further away you are from the core of our business, so this is the bromine and the phosphate and the potash, you could say the higher the likelihood that we would consider to sell something, but only for the right price. And again, the proceeds targeted to for our balance sheet.
Just one last question, and given there could potentially be more shares out there soon, it sounds like there's, as I said, there's certainly a view that the specialty chemical business is underappreciated. Is there anything that you find that the investment community overlooks in terms of what you and other senior managers are the most excited about, given growth prospects? Is it the formula in China? Is it something else? Just any quick commentary on that?
I think it's just on average. I've been with the company for 10 years. And been joining the telecon, the quarterly teleconferences for 10 years. And 80% or 90% of the call is, what's the price of potash the next quarter, or something that's like that. And you saw the slide, and it's in the books if you had it. You'll see that half of our income is actually more than half of our income is coming from specialty chemicals, specialty solutions. And so I would just say broadly that the specialty part of our business is overshadowed by potash. And I think that that's the part that's missing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.